1 hour complete. Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen with you right up until 9 o'clock on KHTK. Things we hit in the first hour. Kings got a win, and they're playing the T-Wolves on Friday. They've now won 4 out of 6 after a big win last night, erasing a 20-point deficit. 94-93 was your final there. Katie joins us from frigid Minneapolis, I'm sure, as she got there late last night getting ready for that game on Friday.
Do you want the temperature as of, well, it's 9:06
is it double digits at least?
Yes, sir, okay. It is. We have gone up from 21 to 22 degrees. Oh. However, it apparently feels like 14.
Okay. Yeah, it's not quite as bad.
I haven't been outside yet.
But that doesn't mean that it's good.
Yeah.
Real quick, before we get to this Basketball Hall of Fame thing, I know you were obviously busy yesterday, so you may not have seen this, but that Ted Cruz-looking chump-ass Grayson Allen from Duke.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah.
He got suspended because he can't stop tripping people. What a baby he is. Look at him over there throwing a fit on the bench, like in tears because he got caught tripping people, which is something he has a habit
it's
of doing.
Like, it's like his third offense, isn't it?
He did it multiple times.
It's pretty egregious. Yeah.
And I mean, this one wasn't even close. And, a guy kind of spun off of him and he was flailing out of the way and basically kicked the guy in the back of the knee. And, full disclosure here, I mean, you know this. There are little things you can do that are, I guess, clever gamesmanship. Like, when, and this is kind of along those lines, so I get it. But, like, one of the things if I'm defending you, Katie, and you cross me over, right? And I'm not, like, falling over, but, you beat me, and I've got to open up and get back to that spot. I'm going to try to hook you or kick the ball as you get by. You know, I'm not going to kick you in the knee, but the way that I open my hips and get my, lead foot out to try to chase you down, I'm going to try to hook you. This was not
You know
that.
What this is to me? This is a prime example of why things like Draymond Green kicking people in the twigs and berries and in the head is so important that they legislate this out of the game, because you see guys like this in college that don't have the ability yet and are watching this crap that they see NBA players doing, kicking their legs out, doing these things, and they take it too far because they don't have the, kind of the mentality to understand what's okay and what's not okay. They see an NBA player like Draymond Green doing it and they think, hey, I'm going to give it a try. And they just haven't mastered being dirty. They're just stupid.
Anyway, Grayson Allen's suspended. So I do want to get to this. Pro Basketball Hall of Fame candidates for 2017 have been released. And a couple of familiar names there, Katie, both Vlade Divac and Chris Webber up for induction, right?
Yeah, and they're eligible candidates for the 2017 Basketball Hall of Fame class. Other names on the list, and tell me if any of these stick out to you. Really, I didn't see that one. I need to go to the full list, but like Tracy McGrady, Ben Wallace, I don't know. Ben Wallace, that name to me is like, I don't know. Is he a Hall of Famer? But also another name that has been on the list before and has not been chosen, Kevin Johnson. So
you can go ahead and make the case for him if you want. I'm not going to.
I know you're not. No, I know you're not. But who else? I'm going to look it up
Bogues
right now.
Muggsy is there. Mo
oh!
Cheeks. Yeah, Cotton Fitzsimmons. Tim Hardaway. I mean, he's probably.
Fitzsimmons is on there, huh?
How about Dick Motta? Mark Price. The big dog, Glenn Robinson. Actually, is that not the big dog? Because it says coach. So maybe not. But there's a couple of college coaches. Bo Ryan, Bill Self. Deserve to be in there. Rudy Tomjanovich also on the list. Paul Westphal is up for induction as a player, I love that because when he was here coaching, even I don't think a lot of people realize how good of a player Paul Westphal was.
was a phenomenal player, and he's in the Ring of Honor in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a legit player. Yeah,
there's an old video of him in a horse competition. I don't know if I'm sure you saw that at some point, but it's him and some guy from the Pacers, apparently back when he was playing.
I haven't.
That's something they would do, whatever, Saturday afternoon or something. So there's these two dudes in a gym by themselves. It's just like the two of them and a couple of television cameras, and they're playing horse against one another. And Paul Westphal busted some tricks out and beat this little dude's butt. It was pretty funny. I'll have to show it to you when you come back. I can't believe you haven't
seen
that.
I'm going to miss our dark internet searches together.
I would say that of all of the Hall of Fames, I probably have the most shaky grasp on the NBA and like what exactly gets guys in or not. And I think it's just because basketball in general is a little bit more difficult. I mean, stats can be so inflated based on whether you play on a good or a bad team. I mean, all I know, like if you look at Tracy McGrady and Chris
and what
Weber,
do you weigh heavier, you know?
Right. And so
winning or stats?
Yeah. It's really tough for me to do that in the NBA. What I know about Tracy McGrady and Chris Weber is that they were both phenomenal players that were uniquely talented and at the peak of their powers were top five players in the NBA.
Right.
How do you say no to
this
that?
Is,
I'm sure somebody could find a way.
This is Chris Webber's first year of eligibility, right? This is his first time being on the list. I think it is. I think this is his first year of eligibility.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I kind of.
Same with McGrady.
And this is not a situation where it's because this is, you know, we're in Sacramento. I'm talking about just as from a basketball perspective, I don't see how you leave him off. I think he's a first ballot guy.
And that's
his numbers are insane.
Yes. And that's, part of that is one of the things that makes the Basketball Hall of Fame a little bit more confusing is that, college contributions are there too, and international type of stuff.
Yes.
And Chris Weber.
Yeah.
Had a pretty interesting college career.
There's that kind
candidacy.
Of. Yeah, and there's that dark cloud. Actually, I was on the road recently. I think I told you and Dave this on the air. I was on the road recently and got into whatever city it was and kind of caught part of that 30 for 30 with kind of what happened and what went down there. So I didn't know it all, but for them all to talk about kind of the money and like all of that, it was insane.
What do you think about this? Ben Wallace was a defensive player of the year 4 times.
Yeah.
I feel like that guy's probably got to be in.
Yeah. I just don't, this is the first name. His name has been on that list too. I think with players like that, and this is maybe the unfortunate thing about maybe sports in general, is that defensive players usually don't get the recognition that offensive players do, because the stats, your contributions don't really show up on a stat sheet as glaringly as, field goal percentage and points and rebound, all that stuff. He was at his prime. He was a force to be reckoned with. I think he'll be a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he'll be, I don't know. I think it'll take a few times for him to get in, though.
Hey, it's 7:13. Time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737. When we return, 4 down territory, we're going to dive into a little football because we've got an hour and 15 minutes and haven't done that yet. It's The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.
That's the always jolly and cheerful voice of quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks, Russell Wilson, who responded to Richard Sherman's comments and criticism of the offensive play calling. So has Richard Sherman really taken this too far?
And I mean, I think that the blowback from it hasn't necessarily been Richard Sherman taking it too far. I think where he went too far was even opening his mouth to begin with. And, that's part of the culture up there in Seattle. It's part of what makes Pete Carroll successful is that they feel very open with one another. But, frankly, Richard Sherman's job is to play defense. And play calling is not up to him. And it's kind of absurd for him to think that, he knows better than the guy that gets paid to do it. And just because you're the offensive coordinator doesn't mean that you're automatically smarter at offense than everyone on the team. But Richard Sherman's got his job. Daryl Bevel's got his job. And maybe they should just both stick to that.
Okay, but is he wrong here? Is he wrong for – I mean, he's wrong for calling him out, but this
yes,
is the same
it was
thing
one
that,
play.
That every member of the media did the same thing. So, I think – he's not wrong in that. Maybe it is because it's just one play, but it tells you kind of what we already know about Richard Sherman is that apparently he hangs on to things.
He has
and
opinions.
That's not surprising. That's not surprising at all. So, has he taken it too far? But he needs to let it go.
Hay is in the barn.
Love
that's
it.
The Baltimore Ravens radio network. But what's important was that was the Eagles blowing a two-point conversion chance to win the game versus Baltimore. Philly started the year 3-0, and Carson Wentz was football Jesus. Now they're last in the division. So what happened in Philly?
Well, I think that that division has been pretty brutal, to be honest. But let's just look at the fact that, you know, I said it earlier, Carson Wentz was pretty good through the first few weeks because no one really had a scout on him yet. And as soon as they figured it out and figured out what Philly was doing and how they were being successful, this is a team that hasn't been able to even come up with long plays. I mean, Nate, they don't really advance the ball. They don't throw the ball far. It's a series of a bunch of short plays. And in the NFL, that's pretty easy to defend if that's all you've got.
Yeah, and unfortunately for them, the best part of their team is that defense coordinated by Jim Schwartz, who's done a fantastic job this year. They haven't been able to get enough wins out of it. And there's a good chance that he ends up leaving and getting his own head coaching job. I'll tell you what has gone wrong. It's almost like Mr. Tough Guy North Dakota that went on the Players Tribune before he ever played a snap in the NFL, talking about how tough it is to play football in North Dakota and how they just grow them a little bit more hardy down there and how it's just a different brand of things. And he's a special guy. And then everyone is like, Broseph, you played in a dome. You played in a dome, Carson, and it's almost like, I don't know, the season goes on, weather gets a little bad, and Mr. Tough North Dakota guy isn't so tough anymore.
And plenty of money as well. That's John Gruden, who told ESPN that he has no intentions of coaching in the NFL. The question is, do you buy it?
Yes. Yes, in this case, I do. He has no reason to go anywhere. And even though he did the right now, I have no intention of leaving, he's not going anywhere. This job is too cushy, and every time he gets the bite a little bit, all he has to do is go to his overlords at ESPN and say, hey, man, why don't we do a QB camp or something like that, and they'll take care of him.
You know, I think, Nate, I don't know if I can buy it right now. There's this part of me that's like, okay, the situation, if he is going to come back to coaching at some point, this is kind of one of those situations that should be appealing to him. And I think that this could be one of those things where you're like, okay, I'm trying to sweeten the pot a little bit right now. I know that they want me. I know that they're going to talk to me and want to make me an offer. I'm going to say, no, I'm not coming. So that maybe that's incentive for them to sweeten the pot just a little bit.
Last but not least, it's Nate's last show on The Drive, so it's
Thank
the end of
you.
2016 as we know. I got you, Katie. I'll be here with you. But top NFL moments of 2016. Ready, go.
I can't decide.
Well, you didn't
I'm
think
telling
this one
you,
through?
It's too hard. No, I mean, I tried. I really did try. I saw this is your thing. You wanted to put this on there. I'm kind of like one of those people that like the things that is closest in my memory is like the one that's like the greatest to me. I don't know why, but to me, the Packers and what they've been able to do over the last 4 weeks or so, and that pass, that bomb pass to Jordy Nelson, that's the most recent amazing thing in my mind, in my Packer fandom. Sorry.
I'll tell you what it was. And it's something.
It's
a guy that barely even made it into 2016. And I'm talking about James Andrew Tomsula and him getting paid out $15 million to leave the 49ers. And God bless him for it. Because listen, I am always going to be on Team Jim Tomsula. He was put in an impossible position that he never should have been in coaching that team. They signed him to a four-year, $14 million contract that made him the lowest paid coach in the NFL. They can his ass after one season, and he gets paid out. Jim Tomsula, if anyone deserves that, it is Jim Tomsula, having worked his way up from living in a van down by the river to getting $15 million for one season of work for Jed York.
There's
so,
hope for you
yet,
Nate.
Cheers to Jim Tomsula and a big middle finger to Jed. That's what I say. That was the best moment of 2016 was him getting paid out.
There's hope for you yet.
Maybe. I'd love to get
maybe.
Paid out.
Maybe. I mean.
That. Oh, we don't have another down now, Katie. We can keep talking about this.
You won't be living in a van down by the river. I mean, if you are, there's, you know, it's one of those situations.
That's my biggest NFL highlight. Probably the only good dude in the NFL.
You know what, though? Like, there's got to be some, like, I want to give some love to some defensive stuff. Like, I what Khalil Mack has been able to do over the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks. What was it? The game where he had the forced fumble, he had the recovery, and what was it? He had a sack, right? So it was like those three things. Like, that was an amazing game from a defensive perspective. I think he's had some pretty great moments in 2016, or am I wrong?
Well, getting named to the All-Pro team in two different positions is kind of a big deal. Yeah, I mean, I think that's worth it. But Jim Tom Sula's paycheck, man. That's a lot of meals at the Golden Corral.
You're very hung up on that. Yes.
I like the guy. I just want to hang out with him, have a beer or two. I don't think that's a big deal.
You know, okay, so there's not like one play that comes to mind for you.
Why are you trying to do that? I gave you my moment.
I got one. Go for it. Everyone thinks it was stupid of him, but Derek Carr in week one with the near front flip to get the first down, that was pretty rad.
There you go. How about every celebration that Antonio Brown has ever done?
Truth.
The flying squirrel into the goalpost, twerking in the end zone, any of those, they're right up on top of my list too. I'm on board with that.
I know. Hey. I don't know. They're legislating fun out of the game, but those are some of the best moments. They're trying to take our fun away.
They say that the NFL stands for No Fun League. I know. Listen, I'm trademarking that. You can't take that.
I can't take it.
We're gonna talk.
I think
you're
gonna have some issues.
That one's mine. We're gonna talk some more NFL. Chris Landry's gonna join us when we return. You know what he does? He watches film and he knows things more than us. So that's on the other side. It's The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Back with you on The Drive. Four Down Territory is brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Visit their two Sacramento area locations at 624 Watt Avenue in the Arden Town Center and on Fulton and Marconi in the Town and Country Village. They bake the bread fresh daily and feature fresh-made cold subs and fresh-grilled hot subs. Get your subs served Mike's way with onions, lettuce, tomatoes, oil, vinegar, and spices. And if you need food for an upcoming party while watching your favorite team, Jersey Mike's caters. Choose from a variety of subs, salads, and fresh-made cookies. It's 7:36 on The Drive. Time for retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737. A lot of basketball to start the show as Katie's in Minneapolis. The Kings got a win last night. We're going to shift gears here as we just come off four down territory. And joining us, as he does every week, of LandryFootball.com, it is the incomparable Chris Landry. Dave's gone today, Chris. It's just me and Katie, but you know, we love having you on anyway. Thanks for being the third.
Well, not just. It's great to be with you guys. Happy holiday, Merry Christmas, and happy holidays to the beautiful people of Sacramento, and certainly to everyone at the station, and especially you guys.
Yeah, we love having you on. It's been a great time so far, and as you kind of, we got this Thursday night football game. We'll get right to it. Giants and Eagles, and we know that the NFC East is a tough division, right? But the Eagles did start this season out 3-0, and Carson Wentz was the hottest thing since sliced bread. What is it that the league has figured out about him that's put a stop to this Eagles team?
Well, I think that, it's pretty normal that when someone has that type of a start, that was the anomaly. I mean, he's going to have an outstanding career. He's actually playing a lot better than people think, but I think when you have that type of start, people think, oh, it's going to be this way all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just not realistic. The team is the least talented roster in that division, and they played, fairly well. And as you mentioned, it's a tough division. They're only going to end up winning 5 or 6 games this year. But I think the future's good, and, the Cowboys have had a great year. The Redskins have struggled defensively with all their injuries. And the Giants have been simply outstanding, and I'm very curious to see what type of fight the Eagles are able to put at home. These are division games. People think that they're not going to play real hard. Jobs are on the line. They always are among players at this time of year. But this Giants team's playing very well, and I'm very curious to see what defensively the Eagles are going to do against this Giants team. But then I'm very curious to see what the protections can they hold up against this Giants pass rush, and that's going to make it very difficult for Carson Wentz, I think.
Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com, with us on KHTK. You talk about that Eagles defense. They've been pretty solid this year, and we've talked with you about the job that Jim Schwartz has done there. I would be kind of concerned if I was an Eagles fan, because he's done such a good job. He might be looking at some head coach opportunities next year. Do you think that's a risk that they might, or not a risk, I guess, I'm
right.
Sorry, but you get what I'm saying. They
sure
might lose him in the offseason.
Well, it's always possible. I think that if you look at the openings, I think that we don't know what the Rams are going to do. I think they're trying to look to make a splash, and Jacksonville's probably looking for an offensive guy. I think there'll be some openings. Whether he's the right fit for some of the openings, we'll see. We know that there are two right now. Potentially, I think three more, or I think pretty solid that there's going to be three more. And then there's probably a group of six teams that might surprise, and you might have two or three out of that six that make a change. So it really will depend upon where the openings are and what the fits are. You know, I think Jim's done a really good job. It wasn't that he was a complete failure in Detroit, but if you look around the league, what is the one prevailing thought in most cases is how do we fix our offense? And that could be the right defensive coach or the right head coach, period, that hires the right offensive coordinator. But in most cases, they're looking at the bright, young offensive coordinator types to be their head coach. So Jim doesn't fit that mold, and I think that's why the Josh McDaniels and the Jim Bob Cooters and the Kyle Shanahans maybe are a little bit more in play than, say, the Matt Patricias or the Jim Schwartz type of guys that are very good coaches, deserving of being head coaches, but or they would those specific teams are looking for. That remains to be seen.
Chris, I'm curious from what you see in terms of the Eagles. Obviously, their defense has been the bright spot. But when you look at their offense, I mean, they are having a hard time really getting the ball downfield. I don't know what you kind of can blame that on. You're the guy that breaks down films. What do you see when you look at film of the Eagles? Is it who gets the blame in this situation?
Well, the personnel, Katie, and the receiving mm-hmm. core is not very good. And that needs mm-hmm. to be upgraded. They don't have guys that can get consistent separation and get downfield. And this is a big issue, is the protection up front has been very spotty. Now, getting Lane Johnson, back is certainly, getting some guys healthy have helped to some degree, but those are the two areas you've got to protect better. Everything that they did in Philly early with Carson Wentz is a lot of rollouts, half-field reads, get the ball out quickly. That's fine. That's great. Mm-hmm. But you've got to be able to make some plays downfield, and if the protections don't hold up, then the every route has to coincide with the depth of the drops of the quarterback. And when you don't have protection and receivers can't get open quick enough, you're having problems. And it's happened in a lot of places. It's happened at Green Bay this year, and they've been able to fix it a little bit with some guys coming back. But really, as I said, this Philadelphia team, while they've got some pieces together on defense, they're a long way away from where they need to be on offense to fix some of the issues. So it's a personnel issue, pure and simple. But the good thing for them is they found their quarterback, so they can move forward there. And that certainly was when you don't have a quarterback, you are compelled to find one. So now they can go about fixing the protections, getting playmakers at receiver and free agency and in the draft. And that's I think it's going to be a pretty good offseason, and I think the future's pretty good.
A couple of teams that do have those quarterbacks in place. They're playing this weekend, Chris, in Oakland, the Raiders and the Colts. And, everyone loves Andrew Luck, right? I mean, he's the prototype. But he's had plenty of struggles, whether it be injuries or a lack of talent around him, any of those various things. I still think he has a very bright future. But as it is right now, if you had to start a team, would you rather have Derek Carr or Andrew Luck?
Wow, that's a great question. I love them both. I probably – Luck is, to me – has been in the it's probably as frustrating a situation as I can see in the league, because they have done the worst job. And I like Chuck Pagano, and I really have a lot of respect, having worked in the league and doing a lot of work as a consultant. I understand the difficulty of the jobs, but certainly the job that they've done from a personnel standpoint, considering that they, pardon the pun, got lucky and got Andrew Luck, they have just done an awful job of building a team around him. If you see him in the first couple of years, he took that team on his back and brought them into the playoffs with 10 wins virtually by himself. Mm-hmm. The protection has been awful. They've not been able to establish much of a running game. They've got a couple of playmakers at receiver, but with the protection being so bad, defensively, I think they're well coached. I think that they're at a stage where they're beginning to waste the time of Andrew Luck. I would love to see, with better personnel, this guy has greatness, and I think Derek Carr does as well. The difference is the Raiders, and boy, isn't it great to say this about the Raiders, because we were talking bad for years, it seems like decades, for how poorly the Raiders do things. But the Raiders are the team that are building a good roster. Their offensive line, good. Finding a way to run the football. They got playmakers at receiver. The defense has got two good edge rushers. You know, still need some work in the secondary. But this Raiders team is very good. So I like what the Raiders have got going, but, you know, around Derek Carr. But, you know, it's one of those I'd love to have both. But I think Andrew Luck is the one that's been hamstrung by a really insufficient job in the front office of putting a team together.
Chris Landry at LandryFootball.com joining us this morning on KHDK. Chris, this is the time of the season when things start to get really, really interesting. Just 2 weeks left in the regular season. So many games with playoff implications. If this, then that. These guys can go in. If these four guys, it's just crazy right now. When you look at this week's lineup of games, which one or ones do you think are going to be the most interesting?
Well, I think that, you know, from the standpoint of who gets in, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch what Miami can do, Kansas City, because those are the teams that are kind of hanging on, because Kansas City plays Denver. Huge game. I mean, in the Miami-Buffalo game, you know, Denver's still in it, but they're on the outs right now. So I think those games, you know, you got to get in first. And then certainly I'm very curious to see, you know, Green Bay, if they can take care of business against Minnesota to set up that game against Detroit next week, could be real interesting. And then, you know, I think Baltimore-Pittsburgh, boy, that's real interesting because the division is on the line this week, but then a playoff spot too. So those games jump out at me. You know, Detroit-Dallas is intriguing. But, you know, I think those are the type of games, you know, Tennessee-Jacksonville, you know, Atlanta-Carolina, you know, Tampa-New Orleans. The one thing the league has done very well is they've backloaded the schedule with all these division games, and it keeps a lot of people alive. So if you think about it, and I did a little San Diego-Cleveland, San Francisco-the Rams, those are the only two games that don't really have any playoff implications to some degree. Now, Seattle, Arizona, Seattle's going to be in, but it still has some relevance towards, you know, a couple things. But every other game has some sort of ramifications for the playoff for at least one of the teams, if not making it, but the seeding, whether you get a bye. So that makes for some really almost a playoff feel to it. In the second to last week of the season.
Chris Landry at LandryFootball.com with us on The Drive. You brought up that Broncos team. They've got a big couple of games ahead of them. Are you surprised, though? I mean, they're sitting there at 8-6, so it's not like this season has been a disaster, but are you surprised at the way they've struggled this year, kind of sitting on the outside looking in?
I'm not. In fact, it just felt like all year long they were going to have a problem. You know, everyone basically said, and I think incorrectly, that well, all they had last year was a defense, and the offense was awful. And it's just not true when you study the tape that there's no doubt they won the Super Bowl last year because of their defense. But they had experience at quarterback, and while there was not great, they were not great numbers, the ability to make checks at the line of scrimmage, to get some semblance of a running game, to allow the defense to be able to win it, to play that complementary football is something they were able to do last year. This year they can't do it. The offensive line problems that existed last year are even worse this year. Part of it is personnel, but a bigger part of it is they don't have that experience at quarterback that can get them out of a bad play into a better play. And so they can't run the football, and they don't have the ability to check out a bad play. So the defense, while you know you look at it, they're not playing as well. Well, why is that? Well, they lose Malik Jackson. That certainly hurts. But the big and Danny Trevathan. But the biggest issue is the defense is on the field way too much. So, you know, last year while they were able to protect that defense and keep them fresh, now the defense is on the field over and over and over again, and they're playing and holding people to 16 points, and they can't score 10. And so that's the problem, is they're not able to play that complementary type of football. And I thought it was very predictable. Did not like what they did on their offensive line. They don't have a running game, as I mentioned. They got a quarterback with no experience, And all of those decisions have come back to haunt them and are probably going to keep them on the outside looking into the playoffs. And if they do squeak in, it's going to be one and out.
You know, Chris, I want to ask you about the Vikings. It's one of those teams that I've kind of been scratching my head over for a while now. I mean, they were 5-0, off to a great start, had a bye week in week 6, and since then have lost 7 of 9 games. And now I know Adrian Peterson was injured during that time. What's happening there, or is it just a matter of that he's that important to that team?
Well, he's important, but the biggest reason, Katie, was the decimation of injuries on the offensive line. They lost their two starting tackles. Then they took, a backup guy and put him in at guard that just hasn't worked out at tackle. And so they had no ability at the line of scrimmage to protect for Sam Bradford or run the football consistently. So it's been a complete disaster on offense, and it is just a complete annihilation of that roster. You know, injuries are a part of the game, but when you start to have them in droves where you lose 3 and 4 guys on the offensive or defensive line, you really don't have any answers during the season. It's not like you got guys walking on the street that can come in and be anywhere near as effective. Mm-hmm. And so it just killed them. And you're right. In fact, it's an interesting statistic in that they are the team that has, as you mentioned, started 5-0. They're the team that had the latest unbeaten record and still didn't make the playoffs in NFL history.
Wow!
So they were the last team to lose, and they're not going to even make the playoffs. And that's the reason for it, pure and simple. Defensively, they're still playing hard. They're still playing well, and they're in a lot of games, but they can't find a way to get enough offense. And it's really not just Peterson. It's not Bradford. It's really the problems up front that has really killed them. And yet, I bet they will play Green Bay pretty well this week.
Chris, we know the Browns aren't any good, so there's no hiding that. But Terrell Pryor's kind of been a bit of a bright spot at times this season. But for whatever reason, people just seem to hate this guy. I mean, you heard Adam Jones, Malcolm Jenkins, and really his response to it, to me, I don't think could have been more high road in most of that stuff. Alex Boone's talked bad about him. Recently, you've got Brian Hartline going on a local Cleveland radio station. He played with him at Ohio State and Cleveland. And I know that this is, you're a little bit more at the X's and O's in the film and stuff, but I mean, do you have any idea, why do people hate Terrell Pryor so much?
Well, I think that he's certainly a guy that on the field can talk a little bit, and I think people, that's just personality conflicts, as I like to call them. The guy plays hard, he plays well, it's outstanding player, competitor. I think some people get under other people's skin a little bit more. He tends to. He's physical, so there's a lot of hand-checking there. There's nothing he does that's wrong. It just, again, personality issues that exist within the league, and today all that stuff is out in the open, out in the public. They're guys that do a lot of things that can be frowned upon in the league. I think Terrell's just a guy that gets under people's skin, and it's nothing more than that.
Well, and I mean, this is a guy that we've been hearing about Terrell Pryor since he was in high school. And
sure.
Do you think that it just kind of rubs some guys the wrong way, that this is a guy that basically is, everything he touches turns to gold? I mean, other than the Browns, but it's like, he wasn't a quarterback. He struggled his way through the first 3 years in the league, and you put him at wide receiver, and he's a stud. Does that rub people the wrong way?
Probably. And the thing about it is, a lot of guys don't have the attitude to make that transition. He did, and he worked extremely hard. And, I think the guy is really a great success story about if you can take your athletic skills and transfer them and learn another position. I think he's pretty much a model for that type of a player that can find a way into the league. I mean, I'll take a guy like that's not nearly as athletic and who's everyone loves is Tim Tebow as a person. Tim was never committed to doing anything else. Mm-hmm. And, so in some ways it's different personalities, and people, again, it rubs people the wrong way. That's fine. Maybe it's a little bit of jealousy, because here's the thing about it. He's getting ready for a big payday. Yeah. He's not only made the transition, but he's made it very smoothly and very very effectively, and so he's going to get a big time payday. I just think it's a little bit of, they're not winning, and so what's all the hype about? He's balling out. The quarterback play has not been good. Joe Thomas is a staple at left tackle. This is the worst roster in the league overall, though, in Cleveland. They're even worse than they were last year at this time. And he's a bright spot, and maybe that's a little bit of a polarizing figure when you have a guy like that that just gets under people's skin for whatever reason.
That's Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com. And Chris, with the holidays here, we know you got some great deals for the kids over at Landry Football.
Absolutely. For the football fan in your life, or even for yourself if you're a football fan, what a great holiday gift. If you sign up between now and December 31st, you get 60% off for a full calendar year. Break down the rest of the season, but of course, we'll get you ready. College football recruiting, NFL free agency, the draft. There's no offseason at LandryFootball.com. I'll take you through the rest of the offseason, all next season at this time. 60% off using the code 40, because it's $39.99, $40 for one full year using the code 40. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year from us to you. Take advantage of it. It's only good through December 31st. Great gift idea for looking for someone. It's late. You don't want to fight everybody at the malls. What a great opportunity for your football fan in your life.
Give them the gift of knowledge. I like that, Chris. We appreciate it, man. You have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, the whole deal, and we'll talk to you in 2017.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a bunch. Appreciate it, and y'all be safe in the holidays, and God bless. Take care.
All right, take care, buddy. That's Chris Landry. Always a pleasure. And I thought, Katie, those were some great points about Terrell Pryor. Just cause, and I don't know why people don't bring that up more, the type of work ethic and commitment it takes, and the humility to put yourself through that and start to excel at another position. I hated Terrell Pryor when he was in high school and even in college, mm-hmm. and I get that. He's one of those guys that you just heard too much about him. And I think, frankly, in Ohio, you're getting some of that oversaturation. It's been the Terrell Pryor show for, well, gosh, how old is the guy? I mean, since he was 16 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And so I can get why people might be a little burnt out on that, but I think Chris is absolutely right. That's a great story, and he's going to get paid in the offseason.
Yeah, he's going to get paid, and people can hate as much as they want. Opponents can talk as much crap as they want. It really doesn't matter. What comes down to it is what you're able to do on the field, which he's got that covered. And then also, yeah, he's going to get paid. So who's got the last word and all that?
Well, that's 2 hours in the books, guys, and we got a lot of good NFL talk in, and we're going to shift gears back to the NBA next. Of course, the Kings, they've won 4-6. They won last night. DeMarcus Cousins is hot, and Sam Amick knows just about everything there is to know about the NBA. So we'll check in with him when we return on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.